Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hi, good morning, and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. Then this really is relating to mind power today. Self-sabotage. Who hasn't done it? How do we get past certain things that we superimpose upon ourselves subconsciously? What do we do when we're in the working world and we are finding ourselves in environments that can be extremely disruptive to us? Do we go home with a headache? Do we end up being so agitated that we find we can't communicate well with those around us because we already have our attitudes in place? My guest today is Shehrzad Shamim. This is a man who really has a passion, one, for business. He really enjoys business. And two, he cares for people. And he realizes for business to be successful, for us to be successful in life, we need to understand certain things so that we can take what could be very disruptive and make it into something that's a cohesive working unit. Shehrzad, your book is Positive Intelligence. It has reached bestseller status. It has really been exciting for a lot of people to get an awareness of you and your attitudes about business. Why is it that this has taken such an important part in your life? What is it that has made you decide that you want to help other people recognize their own power and the power of working with individuals in a harmonious manner?
Well, good morning, Donna, and to your listeners. It's a pleasure for me to be on your show. So in answer to your question, yes, I have been in business and enjoyed it. I had a career first as an engineer and then went to Stanford Business School, got my MBA, and actually ran a software company and then became a coach to other executives. I've been coaching literally hundreds of CEOs and their executive teams in the last 15 years. And what got me to want to write this book is that here I am coaching these extremely successful people and realizing that as they really begin to tell me the truth about their lives, they are actually suffering a lot. They're under incredible stress. They are suffering a lot of self-doubts in private, and that even when they are achieving great success, they're extremely unhappy people. So I started realizing that all these people are busy self-sabotaging themselves. There could be a better way, and that I could really help millions of people with these technologies that I was developing in coaching executives.
Shehrzad, in your book, you start off with what you call PQ, positive intelligence and PQ. And you're talking in your book about a man by the name of Frank, and he had certain challenges. Tell us about Frank, and what is PQ?
The last question, PQ is short for positive intelligence quotient. So just like your IQ is your cognitive intelligence, EQ is emotional intelligence. PQ stands for positive intelligence. And Frank is a CEO that I was working with whose company hit the skids during the big recession of 2008. He had founded his company. He had taken it public. He was a billionaire before the recession, and his company lost two-thirds of its stock value during the big recession. So literally, in my first meeting with him, he confessed to me that he had literally broken down crying in front of his teenage daughter because his pain was so high about what do I do, the company is going down, and I have failed at it. And that's when I started working with him.
Shehrzad, you yourself had some very intense experiences relative to becoming aware of how important this PQ, emotional intelligence, is and how it can really disrupt it. You have always been a very hardworking individual, strong drive, but you describe certain aspects of personality, the judge, the saboteur. You have a number of different things, the stickler, the restless person, the hyperachiever, the victim. You have these different terms. But I'd like my audience to hear how you became aware of this within yourself and how it really was undermining you.
Yes, these saboteurs that I identify in the book, there are 10 of them. They have names like the judge, the controller, the victim, the stickler, the pleaser, the avoider. And what my research has shown is that every single human being, including myself, actually is constantly sabotaged by a couple of these characters. And there's an assessment on positiveintelligence.com that helps you. It's a free assessment over 5 minutes to help you figure out which one your internal saboteur is. And mine happened to be the judge and the victim. And as I describe in the book, these characters actually come in to help you when you are young. They come in to help you survive the difficulties of childhood. So actually my judge and my victim saboteurs were extremely helpful in helping me deal with a very, very dysfunctional family with a lot of violence and anger and poverty around me. The problem is that they became a way of life in my brain. So when I was an adult going to business school, I had no idea that I had an extremely strong judge that was judging everything that moved in front of me. And it was through a very powerful class I took at business school where all of a sudden it got exposed and I realized, wow, there's this lens through which I interpreted everything and reacted to everything. It had been the lens of the judge saboteur, but even though it had served me as a child, it was now really preventing me from further success. But that's when I became aware that there were these lenses through which I saw life, and I was completely unaware of them before.
Being mindful, being consciously present with ourselves is not an easy job. And this was something for you, and you tell the story in your book, Positive Intelligence, how this was really an eye-opener, and it changed the way that you interact with people. And I really, really enjoyed the story that you shared about your own child, Keon, and how you wanted to make sure that your son had a healthy self-esteem, but was going to develop certain patterns of balance that you felt you didn't have. And I really thought that was significant. Share with my audience how you interacted with your son and have used the wisdom that you gained about yourself to help him become a more balanced person.
What I'm noticing with a lot of people that I coach is that even when they are very, very successful, they are still never happy and their level of self-acceptance and self-love is very low. And then I realize that a lot of it is because people grow up with a sense of conditional love and they think that the reason they are worthy is because they are performing, they are keeping their room clean and they are getting good grades and they are succeeding at something and that's why they're worthy. And that the problem with that is that that will have them constantly feel hunger and they're never really satisfied with anything they have in their life. So to prevent that from happening with my son, I have started a tickling game with him. I start tickling him and I've taught him that he needs to give me all the right answers before I stop tickling him. And so I start tickling him and I say, oh, Keon, why do I love you so much? And he has learned to say, and he says, well, Daddy, I don't know why you love me so much. And then I say, is it because you're so handsome? And Keon is incredibly handsome just between us. And he says, no, Daddy, it's not because I'm handsome. And then I say, is it because you're so smart and get good grades? And he says, no, Daddy, it's not because I'm smart and get good grades. And then I go down the list. I say, is it because you're so good in sports and you're kind and generous? And go down the list of a whole lot of great stuff that he has. And he keeps saying, no, Daddy, that's not why you love me so much. So at the end of this, I pretend great frustration. I say, so why, Kian, why do I love you so much? And he has learned to say, and he says, well, that is because I am me. And I get moved every time I say it, but he says it's because I am me. And then I ask him, well, what does that mean, it is you? And he says, well, the me, the real me, is the person that you looked at when I was born in the hospital. And that person, that me, is worthy of love and acceptance, and I can't screw it up even if I try. That's the person you will always love, no matter what. So I'm teaching him that he is worthy of that love and acceptance for of himself, no matter what, even at the end of a day of failure or a month or a year of failure, he's still worthy of self-affection and self-love.
I think that is such a powerful story. And when I read that, I thought, this is a wonderful, wonderful story that you're sharing, because it is significant. It is encouraging the child to accept themselves as they are, with the understanding that there is a life ahead of them. It may not be perfect, but it is going to be a life, and that's going to give them a real strong base. I'm sure a lot of people listening were saying to themselves, wow, I wish I had had someone say that to me, with that feeling of unconditional love. It is just great. Now, you have all of these different titles for the aspects of self, and there's one especially that I really resonate with, and that is the sage. And it's within every human being. And I don't know of anyone, especially having been a counselor for so many years, that hasn't gone through life with some unpleasant happening. Sometimes it's downright ugly. And many times it's a burden to them. They have just carried this burden of guilt often that is not theirs to carry, but they do it anyway because that's what they were taught, perhaps. But this aspect of the sage that each and every one of us have, and the five sage powers. Would you chat about that for a moment?
Sure. What I describe, there's a lot of books that's connected to neuroscience, and what I show people is that they literally, literally are of two brains. There is a part of the brain that's wired for survival, and that part is wired for running on anxiety and guilt and shame and negativity. And that part is where all these saboteur characters are. And unfortunately, most people are spending most of their time in the clutches of their survival brain and the saboteur voices. That's where all of our anxiety and suffering comes from. Then there's literally different regions of the brain that I call the positive intelligence brain. That part of your brain is wired differently. It's wired to have you feel curiosity and compassion and creativity and optimism and entirely different set of feelings that you would want to have. And the character that arises from that part of your brain is the sage character. And the sage character is the part of you that serves you rather than sabotages you. So one of the key things to do in order to have access to your own deep wisdom, to your own sage voice, is to literally learn to shift the part of your brain that's activated right now. And when you do that, the sage powers of empathy and curiosity and creativity and resolute action, all of those get more directly accessed. The good news is that it's really easy to shift your brain to that region. There's a simple little trick, and it is that you need to bring your attention to noticing something about your physical sensations for a minimum of 10 seconds. So right now, as you're listening to my voice, if you bring your attention to noticing, let's say, the weight of your body on your seat, really noticing the weight of your body on your seat, or noticing the weight of your feet on the floor, or noticing something about the ambient sound in the room that you haven't noticed until now, any of the physical sensations that you have, the brain, if you have electrons on your brain, you'll notice that this region of the brain that I call positive intelligence region gets lit up And the survival brain region quiets down, and with it go the saboteur voices that get quieter down. So it's a simple little trick, and you need to do this about at least 100 times a day. You need to do these reps 100 times a day, 10 seconds at a time, to really build up that brain muscle.
I think it's a wonderful tool to be able to utilize, and that's, you go into more detail in your book, Positive Intelligence. And I think how wonderful this would be also to teach to children. I think as adults and children, it'd be great for teenagers. This is something that puts you into a different mindset. Some terms that would be applicable would be conscious attention, mindfulness. I mean, we could use all kinds of terms, but it is taking the time to do this. Now, you have a story in your book about one of your clients. Her name was Mary. She was the vice president of product development for a sporting goods company. This wasn't a huge, huge company. And this woman is brilliant. She's absolutely brilliant. But she got in trouble on her job. She might have been brilliant. She might have had a lot of good skills. What was getting her in trouble, and how was it resolved?
Well, what Mary had was what I call the hyper-rational saboteur, which a lot of successful executives have. They are so in the rational mind that they think that's the only thing that matters. The problem is that relationships and trust and intimacy and loyalty, these are not matters of the rational mind. They're matters of the heart. And she was constantly in a part of the brain that had no access to that part of herself. So basically she was destroying relationships left and right, and the new CEO of the company said, unless you figure out how to be more connected to people and inspire people and have them want to follow you, you're going to get fired. And so as we started working together, I had her begin to do an assessment of her saboteurs and become aware of the fact that she basically was mostly in her survival brain with her just the rational mind online. And I had her begin to do these PQ reps. So one of the ways that she did PQ reps is she started realizing when she's taking a shower in the morning, she can for 10 seconds bring her attention to hearing the sounds of the water. Or when she's brushing her teeth, she can feel the vibrations of the toothbrush. Or when she's sitting in a meeting, she can really feel her butt on the seat. And this, and she committed to doing 100 of these a day, and that literally built up a brain muscle in this positive intelligence part of her brain, which gives her access to the empathy centers of the brain. So that allowed her, when she was sitting in a meeting, to begin to be connected to the human being in front of her. And what is that person's feelings? What's that person's true perspective? To have empathy for them rather than just treat them like a robot. And it really began to shift her connection with people, began to trust her. And she finally, one of the things that she did, which was the topping of her act of transformation, there was a Halloween party where she actually had, since she had moved from being a person who was constantly saying yes, but, and the but was part of her vocabulary and image, she actually dressed as Butthead to bring a sense of humor. To bring a sense of humor to the fact that it said, "I understand. I used to be Ms. Butthead, and here I am developing a sense of humor about the fact that wow, that doesn't work." And there's a technique in the book she learned that is about saying yes, and that's how you connect to people and become more creative. So she moved from Butthead to Yes and Lady. And in the Halloween party the year later, her entire team surprised her by dressing up as Butthead to kind of say to her, "We so appreciate your transformation and we are here with you."
One of the important points I feel about this story is, and I think there might be many individuals who are in executive positioning that through the trainings they've got, through many standards, the business attitude, whatever their environments have been, the very patterns that Mary displays and exhibits, that often has been so reinforced And historically, if you look at people that have truly been successful, I am not talking about the gazillionaire. I am talking about the persons, and we have some in business today that are, we've always had people in business like this, that really sincerely are looking at business as a whole package. They realize that without people, they're not going to have their business. It is because of people they are in business, and they develop this communication style that is suitable for them. But it, how do I want to say this? It's not a kissy-kissy style. It's real. It's not phony. And they're not in everybody's lives. They're not wanting to know all your business. That's not it. They're thoughtful. They're compassionate. They are aware. And they work with people. And this is something that people want. They really want. They don't want you to live their lives for them. They want you to look at them as a human being. Because life has its ups and downs for everybody. And that's what gives a cohesiveness to a company. I've seen this with people that have run companies. I've watched people drive their employees away so the company just falls apart. I've seen other companies go through hard times, and the employees are so loyal because they feel that they have a vested interest in the company itself, and they really trust and are aware. They're not lied to. They're communicated to and with, and it really does make a difference. And I think that that's your what so many strong points about your book, Positive Intelligence, brings forth. And the information here is for anybody in any way of life. It helps in family relationships. It helps in associations. If maybe you're not, maybe you're retired, but you're working in a volunteer group, or you're doing something. We are always going to be interacting with other people, and I think your book goes a long way to making healthy relationships.
And one of the things that's powerful, Donna, about how it does that is that I talk about how because the brain has mirror neurons, our brains automatically mimic our brains. So if a leader or if a parent or if a spouse is stuck in their survival brain and it's coming from a saboteur, whether it's the judge, the controller, stickler, victim, whatever, that automatically triggers the saboteur in the other person, which means you are automatically bring out the worst in the other person, as opposed to if you're able to shift yourself to the sage in your own brain, you will automatically begin to bring out the sage in your spouse, in your child, in the person who is working for you. So the question that I have for each person on this call is, are you bringing out the worst in yourself or the best in yourself? And that almost determines whether you're bringing out the best or worst in other people around you. So it actually goes both ways. You can change your own life and help change other people's lives around you by doing the positive intelligence techniques.
You bring a point out in your book that I think every woman in the world is going to say, I don't know that I'd agree with him on this. Multitaskers. Now, I have heard this for years, that men are often very myopic. They focus on something, and I don't think that this is 100% true, but they focus, and a lot of this is how men are raised. If you are working, you're working. If you are doing something at home, you're doing something at home. Nobody's allowed to interfere. It's one thing. Women, it's like we're burping the baby, we're taking care of cleaning the house, we're running a business maybe, we're doing all of these things. And in the book, you say, multitaskers are terrible at every aspect of multitasking. I actually should say Professor Nath. You've quoted Professor Nath. They get distracted constantly. Their memory is very disorganized. We worry that it may be creating people who are unable to think well and clearly. Well, as a woman and having interacted with so many women, they will often say they just get totally, totally exhausted. Let's talk about multitasking for a minute here.
Yeah, it's the research coming out, especially from Stanford on my own work, that shows as you study the brain of multitaskers, they're far less efficient in getting things done than non-multitaskers. And I want to clarify something. Let's say let's say I have three things on the book or four things on the book that I need to do this hour. What multitaskers do is try to do all four of them at the same time. They think they're being efficient. And what I'm proposing here is, do you have the discipline of the mind so that when you're doing item number one, you can be completely 100% focused on item number one before you shift and switch? And an example of that actually is eating. Most of us, when we are eating, we are completely absent-mindedly shuffling food down our throats.
Mm-hmm.
Just imagine, and what I'm asking for is, can you, for at least five bites full, as you're eating, really just be eating, meaning completely focus on the taste of the food in your mouth. What I promise you is when you take a few bitefuls with complete focus on eating, it's going to transform your nature, the nature of your relationship with that food. It's going to enhance the pleasure of it fivefold. You're going to eat less. You're going to enjoy it more. And then when you go to do the next job that you have to do, you're going to be completely focused on that one. So it doesn't mean do fewer things. It means as you're doing anything, be completely present for that one thing. And you'll be far more efficient that way, and also get a lot more enjoyment out of it, because as you put that singular focus, your brain shifts more to the positive intelligence brain, and all the mind chatter and all the anxiety and all the noise of your mind disappears. So you're having peace as you're doing any one of the activities that you do.
Well, I know, Shahzad, that we are out of time, and I want my audience to be sure to check out your website, because they can take the PQ test on the website. It's positiveintelligence.com, positiveintelligence.com. It is an excellent book, and I'd recommend that when you're reading it, have a highlighter. Do what I do, because I review so many books. What I would like for you to do is to have a highlighter and go through the book and realize that this is something that is going to enhance your life on so many levels. It really is a book that is going to enhance your positive intelligence. Shahzad Shamin, thank you so much for being my guest. I know your schedule is a busy one, and congratulations on achieving recognition from so many aspects of the publishing industry. That is marvelous.
Thank you, Donna. It has been a real pleasure talking to you and your audience.
Have a magnificent day and much continued success. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to come back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Telephone lines are now open. Give me a buzz at 888-627-6008 if you'd like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Speaking of intuitive insight, I'm going to be sharing it with anyone that wants to interact with me in person at a wonderful event. It's starting day after tomorrow. It's the Washington Midsummer Renaissance Fair, and I have three passes left. So if you and your family would like to go, we've got 3 family passes left for the first 3 weekends in August, and it's coming up just around the corner. So give me a call at my office, 253-582-5604, and we'll get that pass off to you. It's a marvelous event. You can go to Washington Fair, FAIRE.com, and get all of the details. It is going to be held at the Kelly Farm in Bonnie Lake, Washington. And they have extended the hours this year due to popular demand, so we're going to be there from 10 until 7. And stop by my booth and say hello. I have these huge yellow banners with gigantic red lions on them to meet with the theme of the medieval fantasy environment. So I welcome you. Come along. Give me a call. I've got 3 passes left for a family, so give me a call, and I'll get it out to you right away. I wanted to share a poem with you that I have in front of me. It's written by Paula Peters. The scent of newly turned earth, the sprinkling of tiny seeds, cool water added to hot sunshine and love. This is a gardener's world. I don't know about you, but I find that when I go out walking in my neighborhood, the most comfortable way to start a conversation with someone, perhaps that you've never met, we have new neighbors in our neighborhood, what it is often, it is with gardening. And so many of our neighbors love their gardens, and they have all different types of things. One lady I know, she's growing a garden in just this little circular plot that she has in her front yard. We've been amazed at how well it's been doing. It's a topic of conversation. Flowers, you know, food gardens, whatever it is. It's a wonderful way to open up conversation. When you compliment somebody on their yard or you're aware of what they're doing, there's just this, I don't know, it's just like this easy link that is so comfortable to share with people. It's a lot of fun. And one of the things that you'll find, especially when you take the time to go out walking, if you just say good morning to people, have you ever noticed sometimes they look at you like you're nuts? They don't know who you are. People say good morning to each other? My goodness, what a new thing. And it really isn't. But people have become so isolated. So warm weather brings this out. And why not have just congeniality, talk with people, share a moment or two. It enriches your day, and you probably are going to make a friend, and it'll be totally unexpected. It's just marvelous. Years ago, it was very common for people to have that kind of communication with neighbors because there was a time when people didn't travel further than 75 miles away from home. My grandmother was raised on a farm in Virginia, and it was horse and buggy time. She was born in 1900. If she had lived, she would be 112 years of age. So here you have that environment. People depended on each other. They were extremely independent. But there was that communication, that camaraderie, whether it was going to church or maybe helping someone build a barn. There was this communication factor. And in our world today, because of computers, because we have this speed of technology that allows us to interact with anybody within seconds, we've sort of become detached. And that's why I think my guest today was so significant, because part of what's happening is that with many people, they're needing to learn how to develop this capacity of communication, because especially a younger generation, they're so used to using their thumbs and texting, they honestly don't know how to have a conversation with someone at a table. I have some friends who had a big event with a family, and one nephew was coming in, and all of the young people, one member of the family who's in his 70s, he said, I want all of your cell phones. Well, the younger people said, what do you mean you want our cell phones? This is a family event. You are to give me your cell phone. They are to be turned off, and I will collect them, and at the end of the event, you can get them back. To the surprise of the younger people that were attending, and he did this with the adults, too, because the adults can be just as bad. And he did this with the entire group of people. He said, this is a family event. We're going to talk to each other. You know they had the time of their lives. It was like 4 hours where nobody was on the cell phone. Nobody. They weren't Twittering. They weren't doing anything. They were together. And young people were connecting with older people, vice versa. It was terrific. The end of the event, all the cell phones, smartphones, everything went back to owners. And the young person turned to this member of family saying, I didn't understand it, but boy, I do now. Thank you. That was a surprise. But it worked. So I just wanted to share that with you. I have some little tips. By the way, give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. Oh, and at the Renaissance Fair, by the way, I'm going to be available for many sessions, and I'm going to have all kinds of books, and I've got some other items that I'm going to be bringing there. So come on by and say hello. I would love to see you. And again, that's at the Kelly Farm at Bonnie Lake, Washington. Have you ever had an interest in exploring your roots? Well, recently there have been programs regarding genealogy, and of course this has been about famous people. Where did they come from? What is their genetic heritage? And what has been so fascinating is that so many of these individuals that were on this very significant show, I think they did about 8 hours of programming. And what happened is that they were amazed in the research how many of these people actually had a great deal of mixed heritage, genetic heritage. And I thought, isn't that wonderful? That is what happens with me. I've got a Heinz 57 type of family background. But I thought I would share with you that if you were interested in finding out about your family heritage, and part of the fun is when you find out you've got some real interesting characters that you didn't even know existed. I've got a girlfriend who found out when she had some family genealogy that she had a rebel female that she was descended from. And we all laughed because she's so independent and so rebellious. When she was a baby, she was kicking out slats in her crib without any instruction from anyone. And so we just joke with her and say, you inherited it naturally. And this relative was, I think, one of the few females that were hung during the Civil War. Anyway, she said, wow, she was quite a sassy gal. So things like this, you can find out about all kinds of things. And here are some tips. If you are interested in family genealogy, one of the best things to do, like another friend of mine did, is to interview the elder members of your family. And I know my girlfriend, when she wanted to interview her grandmother, she had like 4 or 5 generations that were alive, and she said, if I don't do this, all of this woman's experience is going to be gone. She did this back in the 90s, and she filmed her grandmother. And her grandmother was a little tiny thing. She filmed her grandmother, and it was with equipment that wasn't even close to what we've got today. But she got her voice, she got this, and now my friend has 2 beautiful granddaughters. And she said, I'm so glad I did this back in the 90s because my grandmother is gone. My grandchildren will be able to know about their family and the life that she lived. And her grandmother lived on a farm, and she talked about all that they had to do and what they went through, you know, difficult times because her grandmother lived through the Depression. So this wonderful richness of heritage my girlfriend was able to preserve. And the key is when you're doing this with a member of family, what you want are the stories. And when you lead in with questions, if you have any old photographs, that's a great thing to do with older members of family because they'll recognize people you haven't got a clue about. So this is what my girlfriend did. But also, someone came up with a concept of having a scavenger hunt. And they say, look at everything from your photo albums to diplomas. Engage the family. If you have good relations with your family members, if you have any old photos, what have you got? And look for an old family Bible, because many years ago, that is where family records were kept. And these old Bibles, I know I have one old family Bible, and events were recorded, like births and deaths and that type of thing. Also, there is a local genealogical society or a society that covers the area where your ancestors live that you can hire. They'll do some work for you. It's usually anywhere from $10 to $50 a year. You'll gain access to online databases. You'll get help from people that just have a tremendous passion for this. They'll tell you where to search, when to go do it. and sometimes even telling you who to talk to. It's just marvelous. And then there's a website called FamilySearch.org, and they give you instructional videos on how to research probate records, finding family names. You know, I learned something that I didn't know, and that was that Bob Hope, Bob Hope's name was spelled Hap, H-A-P-E, at Ellis Island when his family came into the United States. And that happened with so many families at all different times. And so if they had a very, very long Polish name, let's say, or Italian name or Russian name, they'd shorten it. How would you know? You wouldn't know. And also, genealogists have really been excited because for 72 years, certain information from the Census Bureau was not going to be made available. Well, the 1940 census was just released. So if you're doing any genealogy, it is going to be a piece of cake because what they've done with this, the information is digitized. You can have easy access to it. You can find out about their birthplaces, your ancestors' birthplaces, to their occupations, going as far back as the 1790s. Is that amazing or what? Yes. So you can go to FamilySearch.org for a link to free census data. And there's another website. If you're interested in military records, you can go to Fold3.com. Fold, F-O-L-D, 3, the number 3.com. They have records there that date back to the Revolutionary War, and they have basic pages for everyone who enlisted in World War II. You don't have to have a subscription. You can just log on, and you can even add photos, stories, or links. And there was a person, Ms. McGee, who went in and created a page linking the records of 5 members of her family. They were all great uncles. ChroniclingAmerica.loc.gov, ChroniclingAmerica.loc.gov. You can find obituaries, and you can find all kinds of things. Josh Groban, when there was research being done on him, there was a letter that his great-grandmother wrote to the editor when she was 10 years old. They found this. I mean, this is incredible. Who would have imagined that we could have access to all of this? Archives, state archives, historical societies, you can go to archives.gov and you can find it. They say they're, you know, genealogical gold mines. You can find all kinds of stuff there, wills, land grants, vital records, birth, marriage, death certificates. They even have information on Civil War pensions. So if you want to make a book that's going to be going to families, this is just absolutely an amazing thing to do. And you might want to share your information maybe with Twitter or in some other respect because you might find people that are looking for a similar name and they might be a long-lost relative or who knows what. You might gain some information you never knew was available. We live in an incredible age, and I encourage you, if this is something that's fascinating to you, check out those websites that I shared with you. I think you'll find them interesting. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to take a break for a minute, and when we come back, hey, I've got a recipe for you and some other good things to share, so don't go away.
Have you ever had a friend tell you about a product they really believed in? Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Toprosin is a homeopathic cream that is just fabulous. I use it and my friends use it for relief of painful discomfort such as aching muscles and sore feet. Odorless, non-greasy, it is a product that belongs in everyone's medicine cabinet and first aid kit. Check out www.toprosin.com, that's T-O-P-R-I-C-I-N, and find out more information. You can order Toprosin online or call 800-959-1007, that's 800-959-1007. Be sure to give them the code DS30 and you'll receive a 30% discount. Toprosin, non-toxic, safe for children too. This is a product that really works. Try it. I think you'll like it.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Phone line is open. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-627-6008. Tomorrow we talk Italian. I'm talking about luscious food. Most individuals, when they think of Italian cooking, they think of spaghetti and meatballs and pizza. It's a lot more than that, I can tell you. And I just remember growing up and having the opportunity, my father was Italian, and to be in the homes of some phenomenal cooks. And I think that's part and parcel of where my enjoyment of cooking, because I was never allowed to cook when I was growing up, where my enjoyment of cooking evolved. I had an Aunt Josefina. She was a short lady, pure Italian, black hair, beautiful skin, and she was like a little butterball. She was just as round as she was tall. She must have been about 4'8", I think. But she was a powerhouse. And her kitchen, she lived in New York. She was in an old tenement building. But that kitchen, which she barely fit into, that's where I learned how to make bread for the very first time in my life. I must have been about 8 or 9 years old. And I remember handling the dough. And she was just this, to me, this awesome woman that just said, come on into my kitchen. Come on, let me, you stay in here with me and I'll show you some things. And that's when I got to handle dough for the first time. She said, now you do whatever you want with it. So I went and I cut this little bit of dough she'd given me. It ended up looking like oyster crackers, but I'm telling you, I was pleased as punch. I just absolutely loved it. She opened up a world for me that I wasn't able really to start becoming a part of until I was about 18 years old. But it was just the whole attitude of food. It was getting together with people and having a fellowship. So we are going to be having fellowship with one of the top chefs in New York City. His name is Marcello Russo Davina, and he is going to be sharing his story, his beautiful book. It's absolutely awesome. It's his story of his 25 years as a chef, and he's been extremely successful. So we're going to be talking about fixing Italian food, and it is healthy. Italian food is vibrant with vegetables, but more than anything else, Italians love the fellowship of good conversation, sitting and enjoying good food. So I know we're going to have a good time tomorrow. Tell your friends, and I hope you can join me. Speaking of food, I wanted to share a recipe with you for a Colorado burrito. Burritos are one of my husband's favorite foods whenever we go to a restaurant. And Mexican food is, I think, fabulous. But more than anything else, it's the flavors, the seasonings that really give your food that special, that special aha. And this is a recipe that I got from a phenomenal book, and it's put out by Dairy Gold. That's right. And their chefs that put this together, just, oh, this is absolutely marvelous. And I wanted to share this with you because this is something that I guarantee you, you fix this, and you are going to have people wanting seconds, thirds. They're definitely going to want the recipe. So get yourself a pad of paper and a pen right now because this is the way it goes. 2 teaspoons of dried ancho, A-N-C-H-O, chili powder. If you don't have that, just use your chili powder of choice. 1 teaspoon each of dried oregano, chipotle chili powder, and ground cumin. This is going to be very flavorful. You need 1 teaspoon of each. Dried oregano, chipotle chili powder, and ground cumin. Then you're going to need 1.5 teaspoons of sugar, and that needs to be divided. 1 teaspoon of salt, 1/2 teaspoon of ground black pepper, 1/4 teaspoon of ground white pepper. You're going to need 2 pounds of boneless beef chuck steak or roast and you want to cut it into good-sized cubes, 2-inch cubes. You're going to need 3 tablespoons of vegetable oil. That's also going to be divided up. 1 cup each of diced onions and carrots, and you want to cut them on the small side. 2 cloves of garlic, chopped. 1 dried pasilla chili, crumbled. 1 small bay leaf, you want to crumble that. 1/8 of a teaspoon of ground cloves. 1/8 of a teaspoon of ground cloves. 2 tablespoons of flour. 1 cup of beef broth. 1 cup of dark beer. Aha, surprised you, didn't it? You're going to need 4 cups of cooked rice. You don't have to use the rice if you don't want to. 2 cans of seasoned black beans, and that's your about your 15-ounce can of black beans. You want to drain. Some of you may not want to drain it. Whatever you choose to do, draining just takes away some of the moisture. You need 4 cups of shredded cheddar cheese, extra sharp, or whatever cheese you might desire. And you're going to need 6 flour tortillas about 12 inches in diameter. Now, this is a simple recipe, even with all of this, all of these ingredients that I've given you. Your ancho chili powder, oregano, chipotle chili powder, your cumin, 1 teaspoon of sugar, your salt, and ground peppers. You want to whisk those together in a mixing bowl. You add your beef, and you toss, and you want all of the beef to be covered with these seasonings. Then you're going to take 2 tablespoons of oil, put it over medium-high heat in a large nonstick skillet, and then you let the oil heat until it's hot. You add 1/2 of the beef, and you want to brown it on all sides. Remove from the pan to the bowl and repeat with the remaining beef. Then you add the remaining tablespoon of oil to your skillet. You stir in your onion and carrot and garlic. You saute it until the onion's tender. You put in your pasilla chili, bay leaf, and cloves. Spread the onion mixture evenly over the bottom of a 4-quart oven-proof covered casserole. And you want to spray your casserole first with nonstick vegetable cooking spray. And then you pour your beef cubes over the vegetable mixture. Blend your flour and remaining 1/2 teaspoon of sugar. Stir in the beef broth and mix well. Pour the beef broth mixture and beer over the beef. You cover your casserole and bake in 325-degree oven for 2 to 2.5 hours until that beef is just fork tender. And then you remove it, shred it, return the mixture to the casserole, mix everything together, and then you assemble your burritos. You put about 3/4 cup of your rice, if you want rice, 1/2 cup of beans in the center of 1 tortilla. Top it with the chili Colorado mixture. Add 1/2 cup of cheese. Fold the sides of the tortilla over filling. Roll it up and put it seam size down in a greased baking sheet. Do that with all of your tortillas. And then cover it with foil and refrigerate it until you're ready to bake. And you can do these 6 hours ahead, and then you bake it at 350°. Leave the foil on and bake it until it's hot, about 30 minutes. Top it with sour cream and any remaining sauce before you serve it. 6 huge servings. Donna Sebo here. We are out of time. Remember, always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Bon appetit. I'll be talking with you tomorrow right here on bbsradio.com. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.